Welcome everybody back this afternoon. Glad that you can be back together this afternoon to worship God once again. This morning we talked about the importance of appreciating our family. And in that we discussed the applications of taking note of those who are examples to us. Mentors, teachers, parents, grandparents, those in our lives who are examples of right character, and utilizing those examples to help us in our lives. The great plan of God and the wisdom of God, He has given us not just what we need to know strictly for salvation. Truth be told, all we would have to know how to be saved is just the New Testament. But He's seen fit to give us the Old Testament as well, to give us a background into learning how God has been consistent with His people, both with Adam and Eve and Noah and the patriarchal law through Abraham, and then with the introduction of the old law in Moses, and now in the new law. We see God's character, and we see how He deals with His people. We see the consistent characteristics of people of faith that transcend any law. All the people of faith share the same characteristics, and it didn't matter which age they lived in. But another great use of the Old Testament is to look at examples of people, both good and bad, to take lessons from them and what we have recorded of them and what they did and what they didn't do, so that we can utilize them for ourselves. Because as I just mentioned, people of faith, especially in the Old Testament, those characteristics transcend any law. Characteristics of faith we read about in the patriarchal law, like Abraham, or in the Mosaic law, like we're going to talk about this afternoon with Mordecai, these characteristics are characteristics that are also employed or should be employed by Christians as well. So we're going to stay this afternoon in the book of Esther. And I'm sorry I didn't put that on the notes. I meant to go back through to put it next to each chapter heading on your notes. I apologize if you want to write that in there to remind yourself that Mordecai is in Esther, the book of Esther, that you can do that. I meant to do it and I forgot. But we're going to stay in the book of Esther this afternoon. And we're going to study a little bit about Mordecai and about his character, what we can learn from Mordecai to help us in our lives. To kind of set the stage just a little bit, remember that Israel had been overtaken by Assyria, and then Babylon came and took over Assyria, and then Babylon took over Judah. So they absorbed all of Judah into Babylon. And it took place in about three waves when Nebuchadnezzar came up against Jerusalem and he took off people from Judea, from Judah, into and kind of replanted them in Babylon. That's what we call the exile. And of these people, there was a whole bunch of Jews who ended up in and around the capital in Babylon. And then when the Persians and the Medes took over in what would become Shushan, the capital of the Persian Empire. And this empire is extensive. You look at this and you think about this empire and how it holds up every bit as well when it comes to like the Roman Empire and all the empires that came before. This was a very powerful people, very powerful kingdom. And there are Jews in the center of this kingdom. Mordecai is one of these. We look at Esther chapter 1, and we're not going to read anything from Esther chapter 1, but we're going to note that King Ahasuerus, who is one of the kings of Persia, his wife, Queen Vashti, he has this big banquet the king does, and he's drunk, and he wants to parade his wife around because she's very beautiful. So he sends for her. She says, no way, I'm not doing that. And so the king's mad. The king's advisors say, you know, we need to really do something about this, because if we don't, all of the women of the kingdom are going to be like, yeah, we're not going to listen to our husbands anymore either. And so they take Queen Vashti and they basically retire her. Say, all right, you're done. We're going to have a new queen. And so they get together all of the young ladies in the kingdom. And of these young ladies, Esther is one of them. We see starting in chapter 2 and in verse 1, after these things, when the wrath of the king Ahasuerus subsided, he remembered Vashti and what she had done, what had been decreed against her. And the king's servants who attended him said, let beautiful young virgins be sought for the king, Let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather all the beautiful young virgins in Shushan, the citadel, into the women's quarters under the custody of Haggai, the king's eunuch, custodian of the women. Let beauty preparations be given them. Then let the young woman who pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti. This thing pleased the king, and he did so. Now, starting in verse 5, we start getting actually delving into Mordecai and the situation here with Esther and, for that matter, the Jewish people. We see in Shushan the citadel, there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite. So Kish, we see in verse 6, he had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captives who had been captured with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. So Kish was the original transplant from Judah into Babylon. Mordecai is his great-grandson. You'll notice three generations between the two. We have Kish, Shimei, Jair, and then finally Mordecai. So this is his great-grandson. And so here's Mordecai, who he has been raised, obviously, understanding God, understanding Jehovah, understanding what the law said, as many of the Jews still retained their information and their knowledge. And then we see, starting in verse 7, Mordecai had brought up Hadassah. But you wouldn't know who in the world I was talking about if I just started talking about Hadassah, would you? What we referred to was Esther, okay? Esther, her uncle's daughter, his uncle's daughter. So notice, there actually, a lot of times we think of Mordecai as Esther's uncle. That's not accurate. In fact, he's her cousin, but it sounds as if he was much older, okay? And it sounds like he and his wife raised her after her parents died. We see she had neither father nor mother, verse 7. The young woman was lovely and beautiful, and when her father and mother died, Mordecai took her as his own daughter. And so it was, when the king's command and decree were heard, when many young women were gathered at Shushan the citadel under the custody of Haggai, that Esther was also taken to the king's palace, into the care of Haggai, the custodian of the women. And we see how Esther pleases this fella, and he provides for her more so than any of the other ladies. And we pick up in verse 10, Esther had not revealed her people or family, for Mordecai had charged her not to reveal it. And every day Mordecai paced in front of the court of the women's quarters to learn of Esther's welfare and what was happening to her. So we go on down to verse 19. We see, and we find as we read through, that King Ahasuerus, he loves Esther. He finds her very beautiful and wants to make her his queen. And we see in verse 19 that when the virgins were gathered together a second time, Mordecai sat within the king's gate, presumably to find out what's going on. Verse 20, Esther had not revealed her family and her people, just as Mordecai had charged her. For Esther obeyed the command of Mordecai as when she was brought up by him. The majority of the book of Esther really centers around Ahasuerus, it centers around Esther, and to a certain extent, Haman and Mordecai. But Mordecai is kind of a secondary focus more so than it is on Esther. That's why it's called the Book of Esther. But when we consider Mordecai and what we learn here in chapter 2 specifically, we learn a couple of details about his character. First, we learn that he cared about his family. He had great concern, and went to great lengths to take care of them. We notice there in verse 7 how that he raised Esther. We read how in verses 10 and 11, especially when we read how that he's constantly waiting for news, we see every day, verse 11, he paced in front of the court of the women's quarters to learn of Esther's welfare and what was happening to her. Every day. Okay, for all intents and purposes, I mean, he may be her cousin and may have kind of served as uncle, but for all intents and purposes, that's his daughter. Okay, when it comes down to the relationship that it sounds like they had, that's his daughter. And he cares for her, he loves her, and he's worried about her. He wants to make sure everything's okay. He even goes so far as to say, don't reveal who your people are. Okay, he does that to protect her. He does that to prevent anything from getting in the way of what is going to come where Esther's taken as queen. If she had revealed her heritage and who her people were, that might not have happened. And so all of this takes place, and she obeys that because she respected Mordecai. Notice we see there in verse 20 how that it specifically says that she obeyed Mordecai just as when she was brought up by him. Okay, so he was, for all intents and purposes, in terms of a parent, which is basically what he was a good parent. He cared about his cousin, but his daughter, Esther, cared about her, wanted to make sure that she was taken care of. And certainly there's a lesson there for us, to know that we need to make sure that we care for our family, both physical and spiritual, that love, that connection that we need to have with those members of our physical and spiritual families. We talked a lot about that this morning. There's a lesson there in seeing Mordecai's commitment and devotion to making sure that everything's working out the way it should. Okay, everything within his power to do, he did. And that's important to note. And then here at the end of chapter 2, notice verse 21. As he's in this process of looking after, doing his best to look after Esther during this whole trial process, notice Mordecai, he is there every day. Okay, he's at the gate. He's trying to find out what's going on. While he's there, notice what happens. In those days, while Mordecai sat within the king's gate, two of the king's eunuchs, Bigthan and Teresh, doorkeepers, became furious and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. So the matter became known to Mordecai, who told Queen Esther, and Esther informed the king in Mordecai's name. And when an inquiry was made into the matter, it was confirmed, and both were hanged on a gallows. And it was written in the book of the Chronicles in the presence of the king. It's important to note that the king doesn't take notice of this, doesn't know who it is that has informed about this assassination plan or plot or whatever you want to call it, but it was recorded. Okay, Mordecai also showed, even though, I mean, this is not his people, he's kind of a prisoner for all intents and purposes, he's in exile away from his land. King Ahasuerus, he's not necessarily an enemy of the Jews, but at this point he's not really for the Jews either. He's just kind of a neutral party. Why should Mordecai bother? Why should he care? Well, in the end, obviously, his motivation is perhaps more so for Esther's sake. But as a good citizen, as a proper understanding of his role in this process to protect the situation as it existed, he found out about this assassination plot. He warned Esther to tell the king so that all this would be taken care of. And it was. He saved the king. And then as we go to chapter 3, we're introduced to the situation with Haman. Haman receives quite a bit of attention from the king. We see that the king promoted Haman. He advanced him, set his seat above all the princes who were with him. Verse 1. So in essence, Haman, it doesn't specifically say he's like the right-hand man to the king, but he's... It says his seat above all the princes who were with him. So he's up there. So starting in verse 2, all the king's servants who were within the king's gate bowed and paid homage to Haman. That's a tough one, homage to Haman. For so the king had commanded concerning him. But Mordecai would not bow or pay homage. And you think to yourself, well, okay, he's of a high position in the government. Why not just blend in, Mordecai? Just do what you're supposed to do, bow and pay him respect. But notice verse 3, then the king's servants who were within the king's gate said to Mordecai, why do you transgress the king's command? And now it happened when they spoke to him daily. Notice, daily, this wasn't just a, hey, why don't you do this? Every day, why won't you bow and show respect to Haman? And notice what verse 4, what Mordecai responds, or verse 4, they spoke to him daily, he would not listen to them, that's Mordecai, he would not listen, and they told it to Haman to see whether Mordecai's words would stand, for Mordecai had told them he was a Jew. So their question was, why do you transgress the king's command? The king has promoted this fella, this as a result, people are supposed to bow. Notice that in verse 2, the king had commanded concerning him that they should bow. And Mordecai's response was, I'm a Jew. That's not to say that he didn't have respect for the ones in authority. His point was is that we're not to bow or pay homage to any man. They bowed to Jehovah. They didn't bow to any idol, they didn't bow to any graven image, and they didn't bow to any man. They bowed to God. As a Jew, that's what Mordecai's mindset was. He wasn't trying to disrespect Haman. That wasn't his intention, that he was being proud, and Mordecai said, I'm not bowing to anybody. No, I'm a Jew. This is not something that we as Jews are supposed to do. And what we find with this example is the fact that Mordecai, he held fast to his principles. He stayed true to what he knew was right. And he refused to listen. Notice that in verse 4. They spoke to him daily about it, and he would not listen to them. He wouldn't allow peer pressure to cause him to give in. Now, I mean, just think about how many different ways that this can apply. At school, at work, with our friends, when we're out and about doing things outside of work or school, with our family members. Times where we are kind of in a situation that we can be tempted to do things that we know we're not supposed to do. And our friends are maybe trying to, it's just one drink. It's just, you know, it's not a big deal. Everybody does it. Peer pressure, that type of influence can be a very hard thing to deal with, especially for our younger people. Older people, we're just as susceptible to it too. But especially for our younger, a lot of times our younger, we want friends. And we want people to you know, consider us to be cool people, you know, nice people to hang out with. But Mordecai didn't care about that. What he cared about was obeying God's command. And he didn't, God's command was, you don't bow to any you don't bow to any graven image, you don't bow to an idol, and you certainly don't pay homage in the sense of almost a worship type of bowing to Haman. That's not how we're supposed to do things, Mordecai says. So, we know in verse 5 that Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow or pay him homage. Haman was filled with wrath, we find. Verse 6, he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had told him of the people of Mordecai. So instead, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews who were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, the people of Mordecai, the Jews. And so as a result, as this entire account unfolds, Haman sets about to, really, it kind of tricks the king into ordering a decree that would allow Haman and those who Haman has influence over to attack all of the Jews and to try to wipe them out. And of course, Haman would be a part of that. And as we go forward in the account, we learn that eventually his plot is unfurled. We'll kind of notice some of that here in just a minute. The fact that Mordecai, this all kind of comes back on Mordecai. But notice as we go to chapter 9. Flip over to Esther chapter 9 and notice with me, starting in verse 1. What ends up happening is the king is made aware of Haman's plan. The king, even the king, cannot rescind the decree. Okay, once it's decreed, it's decreed. Even the king can't change it after that. And that just kind of goes back to the rule of law. Even the king wasn't above law. Once it's decreed, it's done. But the king could offer a secondary decree, and he did so. He offered a secondary decree in chapter 8, telling the Jews that they could defend themselves, they could attack their enemies. So we see starting in verse 1, in the 12th month, that is the day of Adar, in the 13th day, the time came for the king's command and his decree to be executed. On the day that the enemies of the Jews had hoped to overpower them, the opposite occurred, in that the Jews themselves overpowered those who hated them. The Jews gathered together in their cities throughout all the provinces of King Ahasuerus to lay hands on those who sought their harm. And no one could withstand them because fear of them fell upon all people. And all the officials of the provinces, the satraps, the governors, and all those doing the king's work helped the Jews because the fear of Mordecai fell upon them. For Mordecai was great in the king's palace. His fame spread throughout all the provinces, for this man Mordecai became increasingly prominent. Thus the Jews defeated all their enemies with the stroke of the sword, with slaughter and destruction, and did what they pleased with those who hated them. If we learn some lessons from Mordecai's character, we can also learn lessons from his influence. Because in the end, our character, and therefore the fruit that comes from our character, that is what we show forth, what manifests from our character, our actions, our words, that can have an influence on others. And notice Mordecai's influence. The people, and specifically those in authority, they did not want to go against the Jews because they were afraid of Mordecai. Notice how they said that. Because the fear of Mordecai fell upon them. It wasn't just the Jews in general. You know, the rest of the people were kind of afraid of the Jews. The officials, the people in power, they were afraid of Mordecai because of his influence, because of his character that brought him to that influence. And we'll note here in just a minute some of the events that took place that led to all of that. But Mordecai, here he is, he's in a position to be able to utilize his influence to help his people. And as a result, the officials and those in power refused to lend a hand to the enemies of the Jews. And certainly the opportunity for us to utilize our character and whatever may come from that, the fact that people respect our honesty, people can respect our dependence, the fact that we're reliable, they can depend on us, all the different aspects in which people respect us for our character. Maybe not so much for our religion, maybe not so much for our beliefs, but the character that comes from those beliefs, they can respect. They do respect. And a lot of times, at work, at school, among friends, even some family, when they could turn to other people of perhaps the same job or the same office or whatever, or even people higher, instead they'll turn to someone like us because they don't just want a yes man. They want somebody to tell them the truth. They don't just want, you know, fake friends who will just, agree with them just because they just, you know, they just want to make everybody else feel good. They want somebody who's a true friend who will tell them what they think. And Christians, as Christians, the character we're supposed to have, that's what it needs to be. We may not be in a type of situation, Mordecai, where we have influence on an entire nation, but we can be an influence within our family. We can be an influence among our group of friends at school. We can be an influence at our workplace. But it starts with the character. That's where that influence comes from. Manifesting the character, showing that honesty, showing the fact that we're reliable, we're consistent, the fact that we don't, the fact that we stay true to our principles, that we don't yield and give up those principles when things get difficult, when we're ridiculed or made fun of. We don't yield those principles. We stay true to them. People respect that. They may not agree with what we believe, but they respect the character. That's one of the influences that we see from Mordecai. That's one of the lessons we can learn from Mordecai. In addition to that, the fact that Mordecai was true to his principles, that brought about his rise to power, if you will, the rise of influence for Mordecai. Going back to chapter 6, Esther chapter 6, remember how that... So Haman, he's plotting to try to overthrow the Jews. Mordecai, we know his reaction. He's ripping his clothes in chapter 4. He's putting on sackcloth and ashes. And eventually, he's going to seek out the help of Esther. But in chapter 5, Haman has all these plans. Okay, Haman has plans to take these gallows that he's going to build and hang Mordecai on them. And here in chapter 6, notice starting in verse 1. Remember how we said that the king didn't really notice or know who it was that had saved him from the assassination plot, only that the wannabe assassinators, however you want, I don't know, the assassins, there we go, the would-be assassins, they were caught. So we see starting in chapter 6, verse 1, that night the king could not sleep. So one was commanded to bring the book of the records of the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. And it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs, the doorkeepers who had sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. And the king said, "What honor or dignity has been bestowed on Mordecai for this?" And the king's servants who attended him said, "Nothing has been done for him." So the king said, "Who is in the court?" Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace to suggest that the king hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. So the king brings in Haman and says, "Haman, what do you think I should do for someone?" And notice that in verse 6, "for whom the king delights to honor." And Haman says, "Ah, he's talking about me." So he starts giving up all these things that Haman really would want, all the glory from the king that Haman wants. Turns out that it's for Mordecai, and to add insult to injury, Haman has to lead Mordecai on the king's horse in a parade. Okay, poor Haman. But all of that shows that because of Mordecai's character, okay, first of all, he cared about Esther, so that he was there pacing every day at the king's gate. While he was there, he happened to overhear this plot to kill the king. He, granted, perhaps more motivation to watch out for Esther, but still, he tells the situation to Esther, who tells the king, and gets it all taken care of. That then comes round to the king finding out, who was it that did that? Oh, Mordecai did it. We need to make sure we honor him, for he saved my life. You know, well, let's honor him. That influence, and what ultimately would become his position of influence, started with his character. The fact that he refused to let go of his principles. He refused to bow to Haman. He maintained his care and concern for Esther. In chapter 8 and in verse 1. Chapter 8 and in verse 1. And this is as Esther is going before the king to make requests, and she's doing these different banquets to kind of butter up the king, so to speak. We see in verse 1 of chapter 8, "On that day, King Ahasuerus gave Queen Esther the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told how he was related to her. So the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it to Mordecai. And Esther appointed Mordecai over the house of Haman." And notice, all of this comes about all because Mordecai was true to his principles, true to his character, true to what God had told him to do in his word. And it's a great lesson for us to recognize, you know, something so almost fairy tale-ish. I mean, this is the type of stuff that you might see in a movie where everything just so happens to line up, and all of a sudden this person who was nothing is now, has great power, great influence. Well, that happened to Mordecai. That may not happen to us, but it doesn't have to. If we influence only one person in our entire life for good, then that's one person who has a chance to hopefully become a child of God, to learn more about what it means to not just say you're a Christian, but to actually live the life of a Christian. If we only influence one person for good, then it's worth it. Mordecai's influence came because he was true to his character. In chapter 5, and we read earlier in chapter 2 and chapter 3 how that Mordecai, he refuses to bow to Haman. That just gets Haman's goat. He just can't stand it. But notice in Esther chapter 5 and in verse 9, we see Haman, he's going to go plot against Mordecai. He's had it. Well, notice Haman went out that day joyful and with a glad heart, and this happens because of Esther inviting Haman and the king to come to a banquet. And so Haman thinks, "Oh, I'm right there. I'm kind of have all this influence. I've got this power, and now the queen's noticed me, and I'm coming. I'm gonna get to go to a banquet with the king." So he's all happy. So starting in verse 9, he went out joyful with a glad heart, but then who's going to rain on his parade? Almost literally. "But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that he did not stand or tremble before him. He was filled with indignation against Mordecai. Then we go home, and as Haman is complaining to his wife about everything that's going on, verse 13, he says, we'll start in verse 12, "Besides, Queen Esther invited no one but me to come in with the king to the banquet that she prepared, and tomorrow I am again invited by her along with the king. Yet all this avails me nothing so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate." Mordecai stood out like a sore thumb. Not to get on Haman's nerves. It wasn't just to kind of make it tough on Haman or to disrespect Haman. That is not why Mordecai did this. Mordecai did it because he was not to bow in reverence or worship of someone else. That's only for God. And yet Haman, he just can't stand it. It's important for us to remember that if we're going to hold fast to our principles, if we're going to have the character that we're supposed to have in this world, we are going to stand out. It's going to happen. And while our natural instinct is going to be to want to blend in, to kind of give up and give in to whatever it is so that we don't make a fuss, so that there's not a big deal made about it, that we just kind of blend in the background and nobody notices, in the end, being a Christian means you're going to stand out if you hold fast to what you believe in. That's what it means. Don't ever be afraid to stand out. And one of the characteristics that comes from that also, especially in high school, in middle school, in college, when you have your mind set that I'm going to be true to who I am, I'm not going to let others affect me or bother me, you tend to attract people as your friends who also don't mind standing out because of who they are. Because their character is such, people don't really like them because they're religious. I know when I was in high school, I tended to have more friends who kind of stood out from the pack because most of them were Baptists. There was a Baptist church right down the road from our high school. Most of them went there. I had more friends who were more religious, and they didn't fit in with anybody else, and nobody else wanted them. And so that can be a positive influence if you let it, and it's an opportunity to be able to talk to them and maybe get them to come and visit worship with you. But all that lends itself to holding fast our principles. If we give them up, even once, your boss will notice, your friends will notice, and then they'll start asking, well, why can't you do it again? I remember when I first started working, I was working at Shoney's. I don't know if they have Shoney's out here or not, as a waiter. And when I was at Shoney's, I told them, I don't work on Sundays, and I don't work on Wednesday nights. Well, there was one Sunday where almost all of the waiters called in sick. They called me and said, hey, we have to have you come in. We have nobody else. There's like only one other person here. I said, all right, I'll come in today. But I'm not going to do this all the time, today. Well, then the very next week on the schedule, guess who was scheduled for Sunday? I was. And I went to the boss. I said, what's up? He said, well, you did it last Sunday. You know, what's the big deal? We'll just put you on the schedule now. No. You know, I came in because it was an emergency. Not because this is something that's just frivolous. And as a result, that put a lot of pressure when, you know, I tried to do a good thing and it ended up kind of coming back to bite me. But it's important for us to be consistent as best that we can to show forth the character that we have, because if people begin to see that we've made exceptions in the past, well, why not just make an exception now? What's the difference? And we have to be very capable. Mordecai didn't do that. He didn't make an exception. Whether it was Haman or any other of the princes, I guarantee you, he wouldn't have bowed to any of the others either. It wasn't just because it was Haman. Finally, we have lessons about Mordecai's faith that we can gain as well. This last point that I want to make comes from chapter 4 of Esther. Chapter 4 is where Mordecai learns about the plot against the Jews. We see how that he goes in the midst of the city, he puts on sackcloth and ashes. He's crying out, verse 1, with a loud and bitter cry. You can talk about somebody who's not afraid to stand out. He's standing out. Verse 3, there's weeping and wailing as all the Jews in every city learn about this decree. We see starting in verse 7, as there's a kind of Harry Potter, an owl, a messenger going back and forth between Esther and Mordecai. He tells Esther, hey, have you heard about this? No, what's going on? And Mordecai tells her what's happening. And so we see in verse 8 how that Mordecai gave this messenger a copy of the written decree for their destruction, which was given at Shushan, that he might show it to Esther and explain it to her, that he might command her to go to the king and make supplication to him and plead before him for her people. So Hathach returned and told Esther the words of Mordecai. So, and again, keep in mind that as of this point, Esther still hasn't told the king who she is, or that she's a Jew. And notice in verse 10, Esther spoke to Hathach and gave a command for Mordecai. All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that any man or woman who goes into the inner court of the king, who has not been called, he has but one law, put all to death. Except the one to whom the king holds out the golden scepter, that he may live. Yet I myself have not been called to go into the king these 30 days. So they told Mordecai Esther's words. And Mordecai told them to answer Esther, do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. He's not accusing her of cowardice. That's not what Mordecai is doing. It's the point that, listen, you're not going to escape this either. If it's not going to be you... someone else will. Notice verse 14. If you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? And so Esther responds, get the Jews together, fast and pray. Fast and pray. Fast for me, she says. And then she comes up with this plan to butter up the king and eventually reveal what's going on and unfurl the whole plan of Haman. But notice the faith that Mordecai has. He doesn't say, listen, verse 14, if you won't do it, who can? I mean, if you can't, you're the only one in position to be able to make this work. If you don't do it, we're all gone. We're all destroyed. There's no hope. That's not what he says. You know, help us. You're our only hope. That's not what he says. He says, God will bring about deliverance somewhere else. Notice the free will involved here. Was Esther, did she have to do it? No. And Mordecai completely contradicts that idea of predestined or being forced into something without free will. He says, no, you don't have to do it. You'll perish. Your father's house will perish. But God will deliver his people some other way. There's faith there that he describes. And having faith, that level of faith, especially in a world that is constantly changing, the political landscapes in all nations keep changing all the time. And where there's danger from one nation that comes up and may go down, another nation rises up with danger. And amid all of that, the faith that Mordecai had that God would take care of his people. Doesn't matter what happens. God's going to take care of his people. That's a lesson that we need to take as well. And have confidence that God is always watching over us. And God will always take care of his people. Doesn't matter what man does. God's going to make sure his people are taken care of one way or the other. But there's another application from this as well. And that is the faith of Mordecai helped him to understand and accept that God sometimes works in the background. What's interesting in all of this, you know, Mordecai doesn't say anything about God specifically. I mean, God is written in every line of Esther, but God is never mentioned specifically. Notice how he brings this up, yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this. But put this into a little bit of perspective. Going back to chapter 2 and in verse 21, remember what happened? Because of Mordecai's character, he's at the gate. He happens to overhear the fact that these fellows are planning to kill the king. And then in chapter 6 and in verse 1, for some reason the king can't sleep. That's a shame. Well, then the king happens to call, you know what, the records of the Chronicles, that'll put me to sleep. That'd put the king to sleep, but put anybody to sleep. He calls for the Chronicles to be read. And then the dude who's reading it happens to read the part about Mordecai informing about the assassins. And then out of all that, the king happens to say, who's out in the court? Guess who happened to be walking through? Haman. Haman happened to be walking through. Haman, come in here. What do you think I should do for somebody who I seek to honor? And then in chapter 7 and in verse 9, chapter 7 and in verse 9, remember what Haman had planned? Hey, I built these gallows to hang Mordecai on. Well, now Harbona, one of the eunuchs, said to the king, after the king found out about Haman's plot, look, there's some gallows. Gallows 50 cubits high, which Haman made for Mordecai, who spoke good on the king's behalf, is standing at the house of Haman. And the king said, hang him on it. You look through Esther, and everywhere in Esther, you see God working. You don't see any miracles, but you see God working. Where? How? I don't know. Even Mordecai didn't know. But that's what Mordecai acknowledges there in chapter 4. Who knows whether this is the reason why you are in the position you're in? Well, that's true. It's hard to place your finger on God's providence. But I would also say that all of that hinged because of Mordecai's character. Mordecai's character was the means by which God brought about his providence. God uses his people, people of faith, to bring about his will and good for his people. I mean, if Mordecai hadn't been faithful, God would use somebody else. But it was because of Mordecai's faith, Mordecai's character, Mordecai's willingness to hold fast to his standards, to his principles, God utilized that to bring about all this providential, amazing events. You know, I tell you sometimes it's that movie that's based on books, A Series of Unfortunate Events. This is a series of fortunate events. It's the opposite. When we think about providence and how that God, a lot of times people, they want to keep ascribing miracles to things. A miracle is an observable suspension of natural law. God doesn't have to rely on the observable suspension of natural law to bring about his will. He can do it in the background. That's how powerful, that's how wise God is. When we think about the character of Mordecai, and we think about his example, we can take that for ourselves and ask, you know, when others look at our example, can they gain anything from my character? Can they gain anything from influence, good influence that I provide because I'm holding fast to my character? Can they gain any lessons from my example of faith? We did it for Mordecai. We do it all the time in the New Testament with Paul, with Peter, with other people of faith in chapter 11. These examples are there for us to encourage us, to help us to realize other people have been in far worse situations and God has helped it all to work out for their good. In Esther chapter 10, I'm going to read the whole chapter. Esther chapter 10, the whole chapter. Verse 1. King Ahasuerus imposed tribute on the land and on the islands of the sea. Now all the acts of his power and his might, and the account of the greatness of Mordecai, to which the king advanced him, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Media and Persia? For Mordecai the Jew was second to King Ahasuerus, and was great among the Jews, and well received by the multitude of his brethren, seeking the good of his people, and speaking peace to all his countrymen. I told you I'd read the whole chapter. 3 verses, that's the whole chapter. But it gives us the conclusion. And what's interesting about this is when you get to the end of the book of Esther, And you think all this time that the focus is on Esther, and I'm not diminishing anything from Esther. But in the end, you learn that the book of Esther, it's not just about Esther, and Mordecai isn't just some secondary individual. Really, the point of this is about Mordecai's faith, Esther's faith, and how God can use two faithful people to bring about salvation for an entire nation of his people. That's the lesson of the book of Esther. The faith that they had, and God's not mentioned anywhere in there, and yet he's everywhere in there. Kind of a similar situation with Joseph. Here's Mordecai, he's made second in the land to King Ahasuerus. Second. A Jew. And apparently he's written about in the Chronicles of the Kings of the Medes and Persians. I wish they'd find that book, archaeologists. That'd be great. And notice, because of Mordecai's character and his influence, he was great among the Jews. He sought the good of his people, and he spoke peace to all his countrymen. Let's seek to be the same character, have the same standards and principles that Mordecai had. No, we may not end up being vice president. No, we may not end up being second in a kingdom. But you know what? When it comes to working for the kingdom of God, working in his vineyard, people of faith, God always is able to use people of faith who stand fast to their principles to bring about good for others. That's part of how God brings about his providence. He uses the people who are doing what's right to bring more good on others. Let's make sure we count ourselves as one of those individuals, not one of those who yields their principles in the face of adversity. We offer an invitation to those who are not Christians to be baptized, to have your sins washed away, be added to the body of Christ, and enter a life. Is it difficult? Absolutely. No one's going to tell you it's easy. But it's not burdensome, to quote John. When John says, we know his commandments are not burdensome. They're not impossible. They require our full devotion. They require our full commitment, but they're not impossible. We need to make sure we're committed to God, doing what he tells us to do. For those of us who are Christians, if you need help in any way, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.